The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm joined by Jeffrey Moss, master of wine, owner of Lithica, a boutique wine marketing agency, and a virtual winery sourcing grapes all throughout the Okanagan area. The company is called Soren. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to go in a very different direction to start, and this is bad because this is audio only, but the first question is something visually. Behind your left shoulder, I see a little mini collection of wine bottles. What's the bottle there you're most excited about opening sometime soon?
Well, I'm seeing two. I've got Ridge. I guess I shouldn't tell people I have Ridge at the moment, but
I was
a part of their wine club before all the madness, let's put it. So there's that, and I've got Molyneux from South Africa, which is one of my favorites. So I'd be happy to open either of those anytime.
Yeah, and I think most people are in agreement. I feel bad for so many of the American wineries. They probably didn't vote for Trump. They probably weren't a fan of these tariffs. I always tell people, if you can get California American wine, why not? You have no point punishing farmers or business owners. I love the fact that more, especially in Ontario, more people are trying local, but I have nothing against it, especially Ridge. That's some killer Zinfandel.
I love Ridge, yeah. I mean, I emailed them after the tariffs were put in place, and I said, you know, I've got to put the membership on pause. It just doesn't make sense to add 25%. And they were like totally understanding and just basically hoped that it was going to end sooner rather than later. But I would add, I feel bad for the wineries, and I feel bad for the agencies and the importers who, for some people, you know, American product was a key part of their portfolio, and now it's missing. And in BC, you know, we're still not allowed to sell American wine. So it just puts people in a huge bind. You know, they're sitting on products in warehouses. They brought it in, you know, it's paid for at this point, and then they can't sell it. So not really sure who that serves, to be honest, but it's certainly not serving some of the small businesses, at least in the province of BC.
Same thing here. A lot of our wine consignment companies in Toronto, you know, the first one I ever dealt with, Barrel Select, I actually used to work with them for a while. Their foundation was California, Oregon, Washington state wines. And you're right, they're all sitting somewhere or sold back. But anyway, I want to talk about the wine and that you can buy at the LCBO, an excellent Boundary Spring, an excellent Bordeaux blend. But I also see in the background, I see some certificates. Can you take me through the process back in 2019, 2020, of becoming a master of wine? First, how long did it take for you to do?
It took me 6 years in total, which felt like a long time at the time and still feels like a long time. I think I loved being a student. I think we were actually in the same diploma class, and, you know, diploma wrapped up and it was like, well, what do you do now? I guess the next logical step is MW. At least that was in my mind. And so I applied and I got accepted. And I just loved being a student. I loved everything about the program. Obviously, you know, it was expensive. It took a ton of time and a ton of work. But I just loved the people that I met, the experiences. It was like priceless in a way. I always say it's more fun to be a student than to be an MW. Because now people hold me to a certain standard. And it's like, oh, I have to live up to this. Versus when you're a student, it's a little bit easier and it's a little bit more fun. But that was kind of how I got to finally finishing in fall 2020, right in the middle of COVID, but it was a big relief then.
What were the last months, weeks, and days like before those final exams in your life?
It was kind of interesting for me because I did it in stages. So when you think of the MW exam, there's two halves to the exam. So there's the theory exam and there's the practical exam. The theory exam I passed on my first attempt, which would have been back in 2016. And, you know, leading up to the theory exam, I was studying 2 hours a day. I would wake up at 5 a.m. every day, study for 2 hours, and then go to work. So it was like pretty full on, pretty exhausting. And I felt after writing the exam that I had kind of given it everything I had in terms of like, wasn't going to get up at 4 a.m. You know, 5 a.m. was as early as it was going to be, and I felt like I'd put in the work. And then, you know, I came really close on practical, so I passed two of the three practical papers on my first attempt. And I thought, you know what, really, I'm almost there. I just need to put in whatever it is, 10% more work. That was a lie, and that was a huge mistake because the next year I did horribly. It was also, I would say, a very difficult exam, but I did horribly because I just didn't put in the work. And so the third year that I attempted the practical exam, I was like, I need to approach this more like I approached the theory and like be more disciplined, put in the time, put in the effort. And it helped that at the time that year, I was working with Ross Wise, another now master of wine. And so every day after work, we would taste six wines. We would do a blind, write up full answers, like put our answers on a TV screen and kind of like grill each other and tear them apart. But that was the difference. And so we both passed that year. Not everyone gets that opportunity, but it was a huge benefit for me. And then there was the research paper.
Yeah. No, sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, no, let's do the research paper, a case study, factors affecting wine club termination for nine California wineries. Maybe this is the nerdy side of me. I'd love to hear just some of the synopsis of that.
Yeah, so I think my approach, which in hindsight was a horrible idea, but my approach was I wanted to do something, you know, practical, both from like a professional perspective and that maybe would have like industry implications or would be relevant in some forms to the industry. So maybe there'd be some person somewhere that would want to read it, which maybe hasn't been true. Maybe someone out there has read it. I don't know. But I think for me, that was my goal. And so I work a lot with direct-to-consumer sales and marketing. You know, that's kind of my like day job. So I wanted to do wine clubs specifically. And what I did was I analyzed transactional data. So I worked with an e-commerce provider or platform, and they provided me with anonymized transactional data. And I was able to kind of just like do statistical analysis of that, which was, you know, a lot of work. The research paper took me more time than I was expecting because I'm a political science grad and I assumed, you know, I've written a paper over a weekend. Not that I was going to do that for my research paper, but you know, it's like you've written 1,000, 10,000 word papers all the time. So I'm like, God, this should be just walking into the end zone. And it was kind of like, you know, when you see people who like fumble the ball like a yard from the end zone, that was basically me in the sense that it ended up being a lot more work and much more challenging than I was expecting. But I finally finished.
How satisfying was it when you found out you'd passed it all?
It was a big relief. It was a big relief because the first time I submitted my research paper, it was referred, which basically means they said like go away and try again and make some changes. But it's useful in the sense they give you a roadmap. It's like here's what you need to do to be successful. So that first time, I probably remembered that feeling more than passing almost because it was like pretty crushing. But then I, you know, went away and did everything, and it was kind of similar to when I did theory. I'm like, you know, I felt like I had given everything I had for this paper. And so if I didn't pass, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Well, I would have to change the topic, first of all, but I didn't know what else I would have to do.
I have to say, congratulations. For people listening, there's well under 500 people on planet Earth. Well under, I think it's like 425 or around there on planet Earth that has the Master of Wine. So congratulations for getting that. Let's spring ahead. Oh, I was about to say let's spring ahead, and I immediately hated myself for using that expression. I'd love to hear about the company, about Soren, and where that got started.
My friend and business partner Ryan McKibben and I, you know, had balanced this idea of doing something together for a while, and probably was either right towards the end of COVID or maybe, I don't know, during the middle, but we decided now was the time to kind of do it. And a lot of like what we do with Soren is things just happen to fall in our lap. So like our very first release, you know, just kind of fell in our lap. It was a Viognier. And so things, it's all about like people we know and things just naturally coming together. So that was kind of like, I don't know, how we got started in the sense that just we got presented this opportunity and we're like, okay, well, we talked about doing it. Now we may as well actually execute.
And by the way, I should tell everyone, bad me. I was focused on just the exams and Master of Wine and all that. Soren is your virtual wine company. All the grapes are sourced from BC, from Okanagan and the Okanagan area, correct?
Up to this point, yeah. So everything's been from BC. So the name Soren, it translates from Danish to soar. So the idea was, a lot of what we do is kind of like, I guess, driven by ADHD or something, because the idea is we never wanted to repeat ourselves. So like basically every single release is a one-off in the sense that we may never do that again. We may never do those varieties again, a blend again, and we may not source from like a vineyard again either. So everything we've done, like we started with a Viognier, then we did a Syrah, then a Roussanne Marsanne, then we have this red blend is the current release, Boundary Spring. So it's all been different. And I guess part of that is going beyond BC as well. So our next release will be a Pinot and a Chard from the Willamette Valley in Oregon.
That's obviously because of just the horrible couple last vintages with just extreme cold that, like to say devastated is maybe not doing it a service to just what's happened to so many parts of the BC wine industry, where so many of them are now buying their grapes from regions all around North America.
Exactly. So that was from 2024. So January 2024, we had almost a week that we were hitting temperatures of, depends where you were, but minus 27 to minus 30 degrees Celsius. And that's, bad news for a grapevine. Typically we often talk about like minus 20, minus 22 is when we start to get concerned. Once you hit, minus 30, there's really not much you can do. So from a production loss perspective, if we look at the Okanagan Valley as a whole, it was about 97% production loss. So almost a total wipeout. And then in some cases, there was vine death as well. So for example, the vineyard that we had originally sourced our Syrah from, that vineyard died and won't be replanted to Syrah. So it's going to be, it's a very fluid moment for the Okanagan industry because there's going to be a lot of changes as people adapt to what's happened over the last couple of years.
That's just, oh my God, just hearing that again, it is devastating. Because replanting, I mean, it's a de that's a decade, before you can get back to it. You know what though, let's talk about your wine. And I realized, I don't know if I ever posted it publicly. Like, I don't know how I didn't. The 2022 Boundary Spring is 35% Cab Sauv, 30% Cab Franc, Merlot, Malbec, and a little Syrah. So your classic Bordeaux blend. I went back and I found my notes for this wine. I decanted 2+ hours, refreshing, elegant, savory on the end. You can buy it if you're listening to this in Ontario. You can find this at LCBO's. I've seen it right around St. Lawrence Market. And apologies, that's way too hyper local. But I was wondering if you'd tell people a little bit about your 22 Boundary Spring.
Yeah, so this blend's coming from the Similkameen Valley. So for those who don't know, I think of it kind of like Napa and Sonoma. So kind of parallel adjacent valleys. Well, Similkameen is that to the Okanagan. But I think what makes the Similkameen really interesting is the fact that it's just very rugged and rural. Like it feels like you're kind of in the Wild West when you drive out there. Like the mountains are more pronounced, they're steeper. And then you have more complex soils as well. What we find, especially in the South Okanagan, is just a lot of sand. And that's because of how the valley was carved about 10,000 years ago. The Similkameen, in contrast, there's a lot of just like granitic rock, and there's just not a lot of soil. Like it's a very difficult place to plant vines because it's so intensely rocky. And it's also quite warm as well. So we don't have a moderating influence of any sort of lake in the Similkameen. There's just the Similkameen River that runs down the Similkameen. And so, especially where this vineyard was from, which is further south towards the US border, it's just a very hot site. So really well suited to late ripening Bordeaux reds in Syrah.
This is a sort of the nature of virtual winery question. And actually, I want to talk to you just about the life of a virtual winery owner and virtual winery winemaker. If you were full bricks and mortar, how much more expensive would this bottle be? I believe it's around $38, $39 at the LCBO, a very fair price considering just the complexity of the wine and where it's from and all that jazz. But how much more expensive would it be if it was full bricks and mortar?
I never thought about that. It's an interesting question. Probably a lot more expensive. Yeah, we're lucky to work with a partner winery who's like very, it's a great partner. It's a great working relationship. And so, I mean, it saves us, thousands of dollars a month. And especially because our production's very small. Like we're doing maybe Like this release was 420 cases, but we're certainly not doing more than 500 cases a year. And so it just doesn't make sense for us to have equipment or tanks or a physical location. It would just be like kind of needless expenses.
So tell people a little bit about just what it means to be a virtual winery, because on one end, you can sort of travel around to where you're interested about making wine in different regions. On the other end, you don't have 100% control of the viticulture nature of it.
Yeah, so I mean, we've taken a different approach almost for every release. And so in some cases, we've bought fruit. In some cases, we've bought young wine that we've then finished and matured. And then in some cases, we've blended wine that's almost approaching like bottle ready. So that's kind of the case with Boundary Spring was we went to a winery and we tasted through 40 odd barrels, 50 odd barrels, and we selected 17 that we really liked and that we built the blend around. So, to be totally transparent, from a cash flow perspective, it's much preferable than waiting on wine and barrel for 2 years or longer to go to market. So it suits probably our use case really well. It also reduces a lot of risk. We can go in, put a blend together, and be really happy with how it tastes, and versus, things going sideways if we were making our own wine. Not to say that that would happen, but it does give us a lot of control over the process. And then, we're fortunate to be on the Okanagan because we have a lot of opportunities. Like there's a bottling facility in Penticton that we can use. So, there's not really a need for us to have much equipment or anything at all.
What are some of the, I'd love to, if you could take us through some of the decision-making processes of some of your wines, whether it was why did you want this region or barrel tasting here or trying to set up relationships with some grape growers on some side of a mountain.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of it's just fallen in our lap. I'd like to say there's like a lot of meticulous thought processes behind every decision, but a lot of it's really just fallen into our laps. I mean, I love the single cumin, and then we tasted through these wines and really loved what we tasted and were able to put together. So that was kind of a no-brainer. If I think of what's coming down the pipeline in terms of the Oregon Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, like that was working with a friend who has a vineyard, organic biodynamic vineyard in Yola Amity. So in that case, we bought some fruits. And again, it kind of like in a sense fell into our lap because this is our friends, have a good relationship. And it's an amazing vineyard and one of my favorite sub-AVAs of the Willamette. So it's not like we put in a ton of thought from that perspective. It's kind of like, oh, this tastes good, or we want to work with this fruit. That's kind of where it starts and ends.
I mean, it may have fallen into your lap, but also all those years of training and getting master of wine certainly helps out. And I think I can say you didn't get that designation. That did not fall in your lap.
I mean, I always say if I can do it, anyone can do it. It is probably what I like to say. But I mean, I put it this way. I think of it like kind of like a music producer in a way. Whereas like music producers aren't necessarily always the most like technically skilled people or the most like musically skilled or gifted people, but they know what they like. That's kind of, I don't know, how I view it in a sense. I don't know if Ryan would agree with this, but like when I'm tasting wine and putting blends together, it's like I know what I like, and that's kind of what I'm aiming for. And then hopefully that aligns with what other people like as well.
How often have you and Brian, have you always agreed? But because when it comes to blending, part of that can be personal and part of it can be thinking about the financial side of it. Are you guys always harmonious or is there ever any conflict in terms of what you want the blends to be?
There hasn't been actually. It's been very smooth. I think we have a very similar palate, and so we're often or almost always aligned with what we like and with what we don't like. Like I think when I think back to, again, we tasted 50 odd barrels before we put this blend together. Maybe there was one barrel where we disagreed, but otherwise, we were like pretty unanimous in what we liked and what we didn't like. And then when we, were working on the blends, what was working, what didn't work. So I think there was like a shared philosophy or at least preference from that perspective. Probably the biggest disagreements are over the label, which I will say I kind of just do and have final say over. And he doesn't like the animals on the labels. So I know like this label has like a horse on it, for example. And he's like, why is there a horse? And then the next label has a bird. He's like, why is there a bird? Get the bird off. So that would be like the biggest disagreement. And I guess he doesn't have much choice because I'm the one who sends it to the printer. So,
By the way, I think I might have said Brian. Sorry, apologies to Ryan McKibben, who your partner and friend on this. Is it because he doesn't like the stigma of the critters on the wine bottles?
that's it. Yeah, I think that's it.
Enter the trust tree here. Sometimes were you thinking of doing a non-animal, but you decided to be hilarious just to do another animal? Because the one thing men like to do to other men is sometimes to piss them off for no reason at all because it's funny.
Well, basically, it has to keep going now because it's just like a long troll. So I feel like it just has to keep going. And
Please.
I like them. It's not like I dislike them, but now it's like, well, I guess it's got to keep going.
I feel now you have to get a unicorn or a liger from Napoleon Dynamite, something like that on the next bottle.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
What was the first year? What was the first release for Soarin'?
Was 2021, so the Viognier was from the 2021 vintage.
So for you guys, big into the Rhone varietals, because you mentioned the Syrah, which I believe is sold out, and God, that's I mean just Okanagan Syrah, Courcelette. There's so much good stuff out there, and you just mentioned Viognier, which can sometimes be a tougher sell, certainly tougher than Pinot Grigio or Chardonnay. But for you guys, was there a leaning towards the Rhone varietals?
I think so, yeah. I mean, part of it again comes down to like personal preference or personal taste and also what just fell into our lap. But I think if you were to ask me, not like wearing my Soarin' hat, but just in general, I would say, Viognier I think is one of the best performing white varieties in the South Okanagan. If not the best performing white variety, I think obviously it's not doesn't have the biggest market, but I think from a quality perspective, I love Okanagan Viognier. And I'm not just saying that. It's like I'd rather drink Okanagan Viognier than Condrieu any day of the week. I think it's that perfect combination of ripeness, and obviously the South Okanagan's warm, but it has balanced freshness at the same time that really works versus like Chardonnay. I mean, there's an ocean of Chardonnay from the Okanagan, and it's just a mixed bag. It can be exceptional, but then it can also be like forgettable and just like not distinctive in a world of amazing Chardonnay. And probably Syrah, like I think Okanagan Syrah, like if you had to pick a single red variety, well, you'd probably say Syrah is like the signature red variety of the Okanagan. If you had to pick one, the challenge is it's cold sensitive and just doesn't always make it through the winter. So how can your signature variety be something that almost feels like it doesn't want to be here in some ways? But you taste the wines, and I always say like the best indication of a variety that wants to be somewhere is can you go into any winery and you'd buy that wine. So it doesn't matter if it's a mediocre winery or maybe a poor winery, but the Syrah and the Okanagan is almost always like pretty drinkable. You maybe wouldn't drink anything else at that winery, but the Syrah at least would still be something you'd have at the very least.
By the way, shots fired at Condrieu. Don't think I wasn't going to go back there. There's going to be angry people in the Rhone Valley hearing. The one thing the French don't want to hear is that their precious Viognier and Condrieu is getting the silver medal to Okanagan.
I mean, I guess I'll wait, keep my inbox open to see if I get any angry emails. But
The eyes now, it's Oregon. What for you guys, is there other regions that you're exploring that you have in mind for the next project for Soren?
we really want to do something from Piedmont, so we were looking at Barbaresco and Agave. We've run into some, it's not really legal issues, more regulatory issues, and that's kind of
Shocking.
what's. Yeah, the hold up on that is we, I mean, we had it almost close to the finish line in terms of what we were working on. So we have to revisit it. It's just difficult to work through the BC liquor system, in essence.
You might not be able to answer this because you might not have the information, but if you BC versus Ontario, which one is worse for regulatoriness?
Hard to say. I mean, I've been in BC for 10 years now. I mean, I'm from
Yeah.
Ontario, but I've been in BC for 10 years now. I have to say BC feels worse at the moment because we're dealing with a range of different factors. So right now you may know or may not know there's a strike. There's a government strike on at the moment. And so one of the issues is there's no imports being sold. Like we have imports. If you're an import agency in BC, you've got your wine in a warehouse, and God knows you're paying the warehouse fees. but you can't sell it because everything has to go from your private warehouse through the government warehouse to then make it to a private liquor store or a restaurant. And so obviously with warehouse workers on strike, that's not happening. So it means that like literally nothing's being sold at the moment. So if you're an import agency, you're not making revenue. And if you're a private liquor store or restaurant, well, you're not having access to product during your busiest time of the year or heading towards the holidays. So it's just a mess at the moment. So I think, you know, maybe for that reason alone, I would probably say BC, but then I could change my mind in a month. Who knows?
Whenever I travel, especially in Europe, and they ask where I'm from and I say Ontario, they always get angry for a second. I'm like, it's not my fault. I don't work for the LCBO. It's not my fault. Don't get mad at me. Also, I have to ask, is this whole wine thing a scheme just to allow you guys to travel to gorgeous places? Because I've been to Barbaresco twice, and that place is just heaven on earth.
I agree. I mean, part of it is maybe. I mean, I have a small import agency. And that's really, I like to put it this way, you know, we started Soarin' because we have a distaste for money. And then I started an import agency because I have a real distaste for money is the like the only logical way to put it. But yeah, I think it affords you the ability to do some really fun things. And I love working in the wine industry. I mean, it's painful at times, but that's why I like to do all these different projects because I just love every side or every element about the industry. So it's hard for me not to do it, even though in my mind, I know logically, like, don't start a winery. We don't own a vineyard, so hopefully that never happens. But now I've basically done everything I've told people never do, because I'm like, don't start a winery or wine brand. Don't start an import agency. And then like a year later, I turn around to do it myself. So I'm not very good at, I guess, following my own advice.
Your import agency, what do you focus on?
It's extremely niche, and it is, again, very small, but importing wine from Greece, so from Enops is based in Drama, and then from Vesaltis in Santorini. Mm-hmm. I import Rall wines from Swartland in South Africa, mm-hmm. Blank Canvas from New Zealand, a Mexican wine, Maria Tinto from Baja California, and I think that's it at the moment. Again, because of the government, we have other things in progress, but because of the government strike, we can't do anything at the moment. So everything's kind of on standstill.
This is a weird way for timing, but the origin story near the end of this interview with you, Jeffrey, how'd you first get into wine? Because now so much of your life is in it and all the studying you did and now the virtual winery and the marketing agency and you have a small consignment company. How did you first get in?
Through foods. I'd like to say there was like an epiphany bottle or something like that, but there really wasn't. My family, you know, doesn't have a wine background. They would drink wine, but it was, you know, Wolf Blass Yellow Label that was on the table. We're not talking about like fine wine or anything like that. It's nothing against Wolf Blass Yellow Label. But I think it was through food and growing up, our family really developed an interest and love for food, going out to eat and a lot of our vacations were really around food and restaurants. And that over time came with wine and came with an interest in wine. And so by the time I was looking at what to do after I had my poli sci degree, it was like, well, I could go to law school, which was the plan all along. Actually, my wife was kind of resenting me for not doing that last night. But anyways, and then I'm like, you know, I'm like, you know, I could look. And then I saw there was a winemaking and viticulture program at Niagara College. And I'm like, my entire tuition for that would be less than 1 year of law school tuition. So I'm like, why don't I give this a try? See if I like it. If I don't like it, you know, I'll just go back. I'll do law school and it'll be fine. But kind of the rest was history in a sense. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'd love to be in high school, like a New York Times food critic or something. That was probably for a period of time, like my dream job. And then I'm like, well, I got diagnosed with celiac disease. And I was like, well, I don't think a restaurant critic can have celiac disease. And so I'm like, well, okay, so that's out. So wine became, I guess, more of a focus from that perspective.
How much has your wife been a part of this? Because when you're doing the studying, man, it takes up so much of your time. How important was she to all of this?
Oh, yeah, very important and very supportive. Well, I mean, I put it this way, like we basically, or put our life on hold for 6 years in some ways, because, you know, instead of working towards buying a home at that time, everything was going towards like MW. So it was like putting a lot of things on hold. I mean, it was all, I guess, worth it at the end. But yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, you need to have a supportive partner. Otherwise, it's going to make it, you know, very challenging.
How long will it take for Okanagan and the surrounding regions to go back to the way it was, where I can go to Corse, and I'm just using Corselet as an example because I like their Syrah, where I can go back.
Corselet.
Yeah, I can go back there, purchase their Syrah from their local vineyards, and it's going to taste what that region is supposed to be.
Well, this vintage is super interesting. So I would say a couple of things. You know, we're looking at an extraordinarily large crop this year, a crop that probably defied initial expectations. Like if you were to ask people 6 months ago what they were expecting in terms of production, they'd be like maybe 50% of average or 70% of average. You know, in a lot of cases, wineries are looking at one of their, if not their largest harvest ever this year. So the vines have rebounded in a huge way, again, that kind of defies that textbook logic. So that's really reassuring because, you know, there's going to be BC wine this year and there's going to be a lot of it. And the good news too is like this year overall looks to be a very good vintage. Obviously, not all the fruit is in the winery. It's too early to say, but it looks overall to be a very good vintage because it was hot. Like this will end up ranking as one of the warmest growing seasons on record in the Okanagan. But importantly, unlike a year like 2023 or 2021, we haven't had the extreme heat spikes. Like it's just been consistently warm without going over 35 or hitting 40 or anything like that. And importantly, no wildfires or smoke. So it's like really been the pretty ideal growing season. I think it's going to be producer dependent because with that large crop, like some people are carrying some pretty crazy crop loads. Again, I get that inclination to try to get a little cash back after the last 2 years, but you know, some fruit's not going to be the highest quality, but I think people who dropped fruit manage their yields. They're looking at potentially some very good wines coming down the pipeline. And I think that should be encouraging for the industry to come. Obviously what we're going to miss though is things like Syrah, because obviously where vines died and are being replanted, we're still going to have some voids still for a few years to come.
By the way, it's nice to actually hear something positive about Okanagan, so I appreciate that. Jeffrey, as we end this, I want you to promote. I will say again, go on the LCBO website and see if you can find the 2022 Boundary Spring. Definitely worth a purchase. I'm going to go out and buy another bottle, and I will use that when I promote this interview because I really enjoyed the last one. I can't believe I didn't throw out my review, my Instagram of it ages ago, and I feel like a dummy. But I was going to promote just where they go to find your wine, if someone's in the mood for good Greek wine, you know, just where they can get more Jeffrey Moss in their life.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm the worst salesperson on the planet, if you haven't gathered that by now. But Soren, it's available through soren.wine. We ship across Canada, free shipping on 6 bottles or more. We try to be very generous and competitive with that. It's available at the LCBO. The LCBO is reordered, so there's going to be some more Soren Boundary Spring heading to Ontario. I think it's in February. Nice. Is the release, which has been great. Kind of like a full circle moment. Like it financially, does that make the most sense for us? Yeah, debatable. But I mean, being from Ontario, just having your wine with the LCBO just feels like this is like a proud moment for us. Both Ryan and I are from Ontario. So we have that. Can't sell any import wine at the moment because of the strike. But eventually I will have imports for sale within BC. And then otherwise, I do some teaching through Fine Vintage as well. And I think one of my favorite things that I do is we do a WSET Level 2 and Level 3 boot camp, combining time in the classroom with WSET courses, but with winery tours as well. So if people ever wanted to see the Okanagan, that would be a great way to experience the Okanagan too.
Absolutely, it would. It's like just such a gorgeous place. I was there for my birthday a year ago and just loved it.
Oh, nice.
Hey, Jeffrey, really appreciate you taking the time. Again, congratulations. Congratulations on not hemorrhaging money. Congratulations on the beautiful wines you're making, on the Master of Wine, and just following your passion. Really appreciate it. And thanks for being on the pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.